Yeah.
This sheet is. Let me see if everybody, what's his name, wants to hear. This sheet is an exploration of something that we started in here. You said that it's a barbark thing, it was a Lakewood thing. And the last sheet here that gave the historical theory of how everyone thought of the thing, that the main thing is to feel good, have the correct feelings. I said that it seems like Rabbi Karelitz wrote the book called Chazon Ish, and in the back wrote a few chapters about his ideas around theology called Amina B'tochen Va'oid. It's really Amina B'tochen V'Musa. I don't know why they skipped the last word. That's about the subjects. I don't know what he called it. And I noticed that he was trying to express the pre-Baal Shem Tov or pre-Immanuel Kant or pre-David Hume, same idea, theory of how to be a good person. That's what I said, remember? Now, what you were saying, what you were telling me back today is, and what I say is, that it's very important to notice this, and this is something you should notice, and this is another way of saying the same thing that we've discussed then. Like, we discussed one detail of it, or one instance of it. How there is this, we could say it in the way the Chazon Ish would say it, or the way Litvak would say it, which is that there's an old version about what a good person is, which is the same thing about what a good yid is, right? Who is the ideal person? All the Jewish tradition, up to a certain point, all agree on it, or almost all agree on it. I think it's more complicated than that, but okay, everyone agrees on it. And that ideal person is called a... He said it's called the Talmud Chacham, the Chazon Ish. Everyone knew, until the Baal Shem Tov or the Bisal Salanta, everyone knew that the greatest guy around is the Talmud Chacham. Nachon? That's what it says in the Gemara, in the Medrash, everywhere.
A Chacham?
Yeah, Talmud Chacham is a weird... You could go to the Shin and Rambam about Chassam Torah and you'll find out about that.
Not a lot of things.
Not a lot of things. No, I don't know. That's why I said it's more complicated. When you start saying not a philosopher, not a novi, I'm not sure that that's correct, because that might include those things. What's not is some, then you have very clearly, I think that this can't be disputed, and I don't think there's even a debate about it. You could ask something else. We could say Talmud Chacham, or Talmud Chacham would also be that, or there's another kind of good person, which is a Baal Meisim. Either you do Torah or you do mitzvahs. That's the two things. Either Torah or mitzvahs. Called in Chazal generally Chachma v'Masa. Right? Either you do learn Torah, Chachma, you can include Nevi'ah and philosophy and everything in that if you really want. I don't think Talmud Chacham means Daf Kaloch, although the Chazon Ish might yes think, but that's complicated. Or mitzvahs, someone who does mitzvahs. That is what every Yid ever thought as a good person. And ideally both. But okay, sometimes people emphasize this, sometimes they emphasize that. Okay. Now, suddenly comes the Baal Shem Tov, or comes Baal Musar, the Musar movement, so-called, and they come up with new ideals of what is a good person. Very explicitly, not this ideal. They say, no, a good person, what does the Chassidus Sheet say? Who is a good person? Someone who has dvaikus. That's what the Hasidim say. If you don't have dvaikus, you can do as much Torah mitzvahs as you want, we don't care about you. That's what they say, very explicitly. And they're very conscious, actually, of this, that they're going against what everyone until before them and after them. Like, Chassam Sofer didn't think that. Chassam Sofer was an old yid. He wasn't a misnagid. You see, this doesn't mean being a misnagid. That's very clear. The Hasidim have this weird thing that the world divides into Hasidim and misnagidim. It doesn't. It divides into normal people and Hasidim and misnagidim. Misnagid is also a weirdo, like he's already against. Against.
It's such a
new kind of thing,
it's
right?
It's such a mean word. Yeah. You exist to go against us.
Right. So there's old-fashioned Judaism, or old-fashioned ethics, which is good person is someone who does Torah and mitzvahs, ideally both. Maybe Torah is more than mitzvahs, maybe mitzvahs more than Torah, there's discussions about this, but that's what it is. Then comes the Baal Shem Tov, and they say, no, a good person, the ideal person, the best person, is the one who has dvaikus. Who knows what dvaikus is, but it's something that's not Torah and mitzvahs, that's for sure. Yeah, Torah mitzvahs lead to that, different stuff for that, all kind of magic like Torah, but it's not that. Same way, in a similar way comes, if anyone that was born by Chassidim has a snag this when I say this, but it's because they're very used to all these like kind of pirim dives. Like say the Gemara that therefore no, it's very there's nothing more clear than this, that the Chassidim come up with a new way of defining who is the best person, and they even admit it. Chassidim are very used to weird apologetics. They're like, yeah, but there was some tzaddik once we could find in the Mishnah that was didn't know how to learn, but it was still a tzaddik and so on. This is all a distraction. I can't get into this, but it's very clear. And there can't be anything more clear than this. Now, they might be right. See, they might not be wrong, but it's very clear break. The same way, or in a different way, but in a similar way, the Talmidim of Rabbi Salanter, Rabbi Israel Salanter, not some other Salanters, they came and said that they don't care if you know how to learn, they don't care if you do mitzvahs, they care about something new called
Midas.
Yeah, being a mensch. That's the Balmusa thing. We don't care about it. I mean, of course we care. But of course we care. But in the end, who do we respect? Who do we think is the ideal person who gets praised? Someone who's a mensch, has good middas, acts like a mensch. And they come with all these stories, halacha is not enough, blah, 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 you have to have middas. Maybe in the Tehiras Shemayim, even something the Balmusa actually do emphasize. Some of them at least. They say, someone has Tehiras Shemayim and has good middas. Okay, but this is still a very different story than the old story of doubt someone who does Torah mitzvahs. That's the fact. Okay. Now, of course, there's like people like Misnagdim, like Mechaim Velazhna, who come and try to say very like now. So now let's explain this. That's the story. Now, in my version, this new thing, and these are both modern movements, right? There might be. They all say they have precursors. There are pre-modern movements that say similar things. I don't know. Maybe yes. Maybe not. And I'm not really challenged by that because I don't really believe that this is a historical story. I'm just really giving a structural story. There's ideas about this. It's not just a historical fact. Although ideas do get more and less popular throughout history, but that's not, it's not about that. You'll find someone, the Chavis Lavodos maybe said that, okay, so he's the same problem. I'm not denying that there might have been people before that said similar things. But what's important is that we have to understand both of these modern movements. I'm giving it in the modern version, instantiation of this kind of problem, as responses to the same issue, which is that the old-fashioned way of, like, a good person, someone does Torah mitzvahs, that's the Jewish version of it, right? Or the ancient version of it. We were discussed, how did Aristotle say doing Torah mitzvahs? Having intellectual and practical virtues, right? Same thing. Same thing with maybe slightly different details about what the intellect is and what the good actions are, but the same idea. And now, since for various reasons people stopped understanding that, stopped being able to say that, stopped being able to live that, stopped being able to believe that, one of the reasons we discussed, it has to do with teleology and so on, but there are things there's even more reasons. Therefore, but that's one very, very basic reason, stop seeing goodness as a real thing, something that is a property of people or of activities in the world. Therefore, we end up being stuck and looking for some new way. Now, either you could be a nihilist, that's the real like flat line here, like the real default now. You could be a stammer guy that thinks there is no such thing as being good, you could do whatever you want. That's one option, of course. Since we're all pretending to be religious, that's not an option. So we have to find a different solution. So one of the solutions was to say the Vaikas, whatever that means, which is definitely not the same thing. It's something very internal, right? All the criticism that I have of over interiority or internality applies to that. Or something also in some way internal, but in any case, I think Balmusa also get up mostly stuck in internals, even when they talk about being a mensch. They end up, at least the people that I know that are working in their tradition, mostly end up thinking that the guy that feels, has empathy with someone is a bigger tzaddik than the guy that actually raises money for him. So they seem to end up in a very similar place, but with different things, because they don't really believe in God. That's the big difference. Malmus and Chassidim are the people, right? Since another very weird way of saying this is the very old way that we said this once about the ladder being broken, right?
Jacob's ladder
broke, which means there's no Maluchim anymore. Nobody believes in Maluchim, right? That's a sign of this, which means there's nothing that makes the world and God work together as some kind of unit, as some kind of coherent, intelligible thing. So now you have basically, either you could be a nothing, that's what I said, or you could cling to God anyways, then you destroy the world. That's Chassidus. Or you could cling to the world, you know, whichever perfection can be found in some weird way internally in the world, and destroy God, which is what the Baal wants to do. They don't really believe in a God. Or you could find a third way, which is the idea of divine command, which I'm not sure which one it is. It's one of these two in any case.
It seems to the people, the common thread that you're saying, they don't believe in any real goodness. They don't believe in any real substance.
There's nothing exists.
Nothing exists. They're addicts, whatever, something like that.
Right. Therefore, if there's a goodness, it could be only imposed from the outside. Like God gave it a meaning, or God told you to do it. Doesn't
even. The kalam, right?
Kalam is this, yeah. Exactly. In some way. This is the story. Okay, that kind of is the basic story that we have. Now, back to where I am. There are certain people that very much are trying to tell the people that are all stuck in their own circles, getting stuck because they have this very limited amount of options and very limited picture, very limited view of the world, and therefore get stuck in one of these like extremities. Like everything is just about Dvaikus. I'm not saying that Dvaikus is a bad thing, but like, you sort of deny, you become like Amid and Alachas, you become like Moshe said, you can't have a table standing on one leg, it's going to fall very quickly. The same way with being a mansion, things like that. You all become very too small things that don't really encompass the richness and variability of life. That's the real big criticism of, one of the big problems with this kind of shittas. They become very one-dimensional. It's like everything becomes about that, and then in every other dimension is an evil, not the case, usually. That's usually what happens. And we'll see, if we'll get to it, we'll see exactly why this happens. But that's what happens. And now, very few people actually managed to articulate an opposition to this. But it's very hard to articulate an opposition, especially when you're working within a world structure, a worldview, which is already the cause of most of these problems. Right. This is
well, also what you also what you just said, right? That because it's not that they're necessarily wrong, but they're one-dimensional. So you have
right.
What you're going to say is no, there's more. And they're like, it's harder to make that.
Yeah, but yeah, that actually makes it easier because then we're back to what wisdom has always been doing, which is finding how what you're saying is only part of the story.
Right.
Right. It's not. There's ways, but you have to do a lot of work. Right. So. You could, like I said, we could see all of these ways as trying to to keep alive or to make alive, make chesamaisen to whatever the ancient story is, whatever the true story is. But having a very hard time since most people don't even have the words and within which you could speak it, so you end up either translating yourself into them and then losing a lot, or fighting with them, which is also a very big problematic thing, right? Just to be very clear, to fight with the world. And this is one of the problems that I have, right? We had this conversation here.
Yeah.
To fight with the world is also not a perfect way of living. Like to be the one that is always explaining everything is corrupt and nobody understands everything. Being a misnaget is in itself a way of life. Being the one who is against everyone, and it's not a good way of living. It's generally evil. Generally, also because it's one dimensional. Also because it doesn't actually account for how people really are and why they really are the way they are. You just dismiss them by saying, oh, you're one of these modern people, you're a heretic. That's not a real way of understanding what that person is, and therefore you lose touch with people. There's a lot of evils in that. It's itself not a very useful way of living. So you have to decide what to do. I actually have a very weird... So now all the tzaddikim, basically, everyone who doesn't want to just submit to nihilism, is looking for a way to solve this problem. Most of them do. I mean, there's so many ways to deal with it. But one of the things they do is to try to speak in the new language, and then you lose a lot, and at some point people even forget. Like people don't realize how much of people say this about the Rambam, right? Famously, and in some sense it's true. In another sense, it's not true because people saying this don't even understand whatever happened. But in some sense, people say this. You know, when the Rambam translated, that's what they say. It's not true, but they say the Rambam translated Jewish thoughts into the language of Greek Muslim philosophy, and that was his doing the Yirid Tzadik, right? It was being the Tzadik who goes into the Klippas in order to save the other people. But if you don't have this problem, then people can make a conclusion. Therefore, if you don't think the language or speak of Greek philosophy, then you have no use of the Rambam. Like Rav Kook said, Kafsa Enzo Kikla. There are some mitzvahs that if they're Kafsa, we don't have to reignite them, because it was anyways just a way of speaking in the language of some people. This is not a correct account of what the Rambam did, but it's still a true structure. Right? If you do that, and I think many people don't realize how much of the things that they believe. Like, this is the true Judaism, it's not. This is the true way in which some guy tried to be Mahzeh B'Tshiva, you want to speak to you in your language. But if someone doesn't have that, it's even better. Okay. And then, that's one option. Okay, we're trying not to do that option. That's my thing, is stop doing that, because mostly not for Jewish reasons, right? Mostly because those shittas are silly. Why would we try to push ourselves into very stupid ways and very incomplete ways of understanding the world just because everyone thinks that way? That's not a good enough reason.
What do you refer to? Why we shouldn't talk in the language that we're talking?
Yeah, like there's an option like this. Nowadays, everyone believes. Remember, what do American people believe in? There was a sociologist who said all the people in America, it don't matter what religion they are, believe in something called moral therapeutic deism.
What does that mean?
They believe in a God who's not really involved in the world. He mostly makes you feel good about yourself, and he makes you a good person.
He makes you a good person how?
I don't know. Believe that you're a good person, at least. Okay. Yeah, he makes you think that you're a good person. Give tzedakah sometimes, help your neighbor, basic things. That's what everyone basically in America believes. And if you look at all the... And one of the books written was called... Catholic, Protestant, Jew, right? The three kind of religious people in America, they all basically believe this. They just have different, they just sing different songs in their churches. And sometimes they don't even sing different songs. But basically that's all they all believe. And then one of the things that many rabbis do, in every version, like you could say, Lubavitch Rebbe came and told you that the power of positive thinking, wow, right? Half of Chabad is this. Half of Chabad, like outreach, when they get to the content. I'm not talking about doing mitzvahs and things like that.
Like
that, basically. Trakhit Bad Zangit. So, is called toxic positivity. A very American trait.
Yeah, you know the Betachan guy, they put up the sheets? Betachan Weekly, that's what it is. It's like,
no, that's not Arabic, that's different. No,
he just says he just talks about
you Mandel, you mean?
That's what he's trying to say. He's saying that he's just a different song in this church.
Possible.
Yeah.
But I think that he's more sincere. Okay, he's really religious. I think he's a really religious guy.
I used to think what you're saying. I'm wrong. I agree. I'm like, this is just secular.
Yeah, all of this, it's the power of positive thinking. You could find Oprah believes in the same thing. Yeah. And many other, basically everyone in America believes in that.
Oprah.
Well, she's not around anymore, whatever. I don't know. All these people, I mean, now there's new shit that's already, but this is something still very much accepted. And... therefore, that's what you teach, and you say that this is Judaism. It's not Judaism. I mean, yeah, I'm sure there's some sources for that, and like somewhat true, but it's a very great watering down, and it's a very great thing. So that's one thing you can do, or you could do even deeper.
People think that's the whole Yiddishkeit. Trachid the Zangit is the whole Yiddishkeit.
Yeah.
One idea in the Yiddishkeit.
What did Rav Nachman say? Don't be messianish. Remember?
Mm-hmm.
Basically, that. That's basically what the revelation of Yiddishkeit. Yeah.
The
Siyayish
is the opposite.
The
is like to be hard on yourself.
Now you're saying Torah. That is all one. Depends. There's different shot from the rest of us. The American shot is that everything is good. Hashem loves you, and he needs you, and all of this. But Kitzel, this is just ends down. I'm not talking about you. You're not the customers for this kind of things, anyways, ever. So you don't even understand it. But there's more sophisticated ways of doing it that do speak to you. Right? Slightly more sophisticated ways, right? And in every generation, or in every group of people, whatever they already believe, basically, or in whichever framework they already believe. By the way, it's a very great thing to make people good people within their framework, because it's hard enough. Like, it's hard enough to keep on being normally good people that provide for their families and don't steal and don't kill, and more or less. Yeah, it's hard enough. It's a great achievement if you can do that. I'm not here to denigrate anyone that's doing that. I think that's real work.
Is that considered a low bar, though?
No, it's not a low bar. I think it's a lot. I don't think that, that's right. You have to remember that the default is something much worse than that. All the cliches in the world are better than whatever they're doing in Brooklyn, okay? I don't know where it's now, the, like, hipster central, whatever. All of that is. It's still. It's a great achievement. It's a lot. I don't think it's a little. I think it's a lot. The reason why I'm not happy with it, well, firstly, because I think that I'm better than those people. And secondly, because I think that there is a real criticism to be made, not bitar yet, because we've inherited this tradition that says other things and so on. No. Not because, look, if you follow that, you end up, saying that half of the real things in the Torah are, you end up having everything being a problem, and all the things that in the Torah were good are really bad, and all the things that I said are bad are really good, and when we end up making every sermon is about reinterpreting what the Torah said is good, that really it meant to say that it's bad. When the Torah says something is bad, it really meant to say that it's good. And who told us what is really good and what is really bad? The New York Times editorial board. So that's, I'm not even saying that. That's something I say sometimes. But that's not, I'm not even saying that. Even that is still better than being a horrible person, which we're all already full. What I'm saying is something different. What I'm saying is that Betar Goy, not Betar Yid, very important. Betar Goy, Betar guy that likes to think critically, or even that is a word that they've stolen from us, but that likes to think, this basic worldview within which all these people are working is very silly, at least incomplete. It's even worse than that, but it's at least incomplete. And it's not serious. It's very basically not serious. I give you all the reasons why I think it's not serious, but it's basically not serious. I mean, that's what I do every week. I give you the reasons why I think it's not serious. It's not serious! So forget about if the Torah says it, or if it matches, or if it doesn't fit in the Torah, the Torah fits into it, the Torah doesn't fit in the Torah. Right, forget about the question, should the solution to every question that comes up in the education of your children be that there's a therapist that knows the answer? Besides for that not being, well, you know, we have experience with education of children and teenagers and adults for like 5,000 years or however long, and somehow we managed to do it without all these people. That's one silly argument. But besides for that, it's just not serious. They don't actually solve anything. You should call the... This is not that rant. Anyways. Right? You should call the school, the manal, that every time he has a problematic kid sent to a therapist, and you should ask him for the how many kids that therapist actually helped. They give you numbers. Like, out of the 70 people that had problems, they solved.
That's the manal trying to help. He's might be offloading.
Okay, now you're giving other criticism. I'm just saying, the kids, it's not serious. It's basically not serious. That's the main problem. So I have a different problem. That's just not serious. These people never really thought about what real problems are, never thought about what solutions might be. It's just not serious. So that's a problem that I have with our mensch. Therefore, when did I get into all of this? Therefore, and now I have a problem with people that say, what do you mean it's not serious? But the Rav said, the Rav didn't say, the Rav was trying to help you. Don't be so silly, don't be so not serious, and let's try to listen to when the Rav hacks on you. Maybe he's trying to say something better then. How about you listen to the Rabbanim that are hacking? Of course, they don't really understand either. But at least they're representing something that's like much older than your thoughts, right? I mean, that's like one of the basic conservative intuitions. Like something that most people in the universe thought for the past 3,000 years, probably they said something. They were crazy, maybe. But it's probably worth to think about what they said. Well, that's like just one argument, like heuristic, not really an argument. But my point is more that since this is not serious, like it's either it's not serious, there should be a way to present this serious way, not because of the need of the Judaism. Judaism doesn't need it. Judaism will survive very well with all the silly people teaching cliches. And that's already good. I can think of worse things than that, okay? So that's not my problem. I'm not here to save Judaism. It's going to survive much better with those other people. I'm just here to, for me and the people like me that are trying to be serious, trying to have serious thoughts, to be able to do that in a serious way. That's all. Now, going back to the Holy Chazon Ish. Now, we find that within the people that are standing against the world, there are various kinds. Now, those who don't really know why and what, and they're just hacking Kaparan. Okay. They might be helpful in some sense, just like creating space to like, not automatically accept whatever
it's. Do they have questions without answers, basically?
They don't even have questions. Because they can't even explain you what's wrong with the world. They can only like scream, which is not even an argument. It's socially somewhat useful, but not more than that. But then, there's some very interesting people, very few of them, that actually do think. There are such people that they actually do think. And they do try to articulate what is wrong with the world, or try to at least give their alternative version of how things should make sense. I don't know, in the Jewish context, there's basically none that are really good at it. They might be like Catholics and people like that. Even, yeah, let's not get into this Lishnahat on the Eden. Anyways, even some of our enemies have better, more complete theories of the world and of what's going on than any of us do. So that's a problem.
What do you have in mind by when you say enemy?
Enemy is just just people that want us dead. It's easy to be, that's a simple definition. But even some of them have more complete understandings of how everything works. Well, they might have their own fallacies and problems, but they do have some little understanding of what's going on, which basically no one in the Jewish context has. Like, it's very weird. Like, the Jews that we know, there's only two kinds. One of them is the like, reactionary people. Like, the people who are, like, just do whatever we've always done. They're not doing whatever they're always done, but that's a different problem. And everything outside is bad. They don't really know what the outside means and what bad it means and so on. Those are the one kind of people.
Why are they called reactionary?
Because they're just reacting against modernity or against whatever it is.
Oh, they're like against,
extreme conservative.
Yeah. Like, I don't know, my great-grandmother didn't drive because there were no cars in her town, but I think my wife shouldn't drive either for the same reason. Right? Those are the people. And if you ask them why, and they're like, they start saying, they just don't even say. Then, that's just one version. And then there's the smart people. So we call them the dumb people. Everyone thinks that my sheet is against, my whole sheet is already like three times more advanced, so already supporting that. But everyone thinks that those are the dumb Jews. Then there's the smart Jews, like all the, who's the smart Jews? The sophisticated ones, right?
Like once we discover that the terrorist ethics is precisely New York Times editorial.
That's one kind. There's even ones that now that we have like Breitbart or something that discovered that is actually that. Which is not a very dumb thing. It's also reactionary and very not deep usually, but that's one other thing. And then there's all these like sophisticated people that in all kinds of various ways still 100% the people that are thinkers. I don't know who you know and who you read and so on. But as far as I can tell, all of them basically accept every single metaphysical commitment of this nonsense theory. They just try to work within it. Non-metaphysical, anti-metaphysical commitments, right? In other words, do you know of a modern Jewish thinker that believes in angels? Because I don't know of one pre-modern thinker that doesn't. That's my sin. If angelology is an important part of your Judaism, then you're an ancient Jew. If it's not, if you're a Mekibbel and you have spheres instead of angels, we could consider you. But other than that, there's no modern Jewish Mekibbelim, basically. The modern Mekibbelim are totally not Mekibbelim, right? They don't really believe in the existence of any of these things. They just think it's all psychology, which is nonsense. So there's no modern Jewish thinker that believes in angels. So therefore, they're all not serious.
When you believe in angels, what do you mean by that?
You know, like exactly, because psychology could also be a real thing.
Right.
No, what I'm saying,
which I really just want a definition.
No, like why is psychology not enough for real angels?
No, they're not. This is the old and all the sophisticated people convince themselves, and it's nonsense.
Do you mean
angels are intermediate beings?
You mean that there's causation?
You
believe in like causation, basically?
Well, no, that's one mimshul. When Burton says that, he means that. No, when I say angels, I mean malachim mamish. Malachim mamish, like it says in the Symposium. Messengers from God to man and from man to God. Okay?
What does that mean?
No,
when you say messenger, what does a messenger mean?
I think with wings, or not with wings, I don't know. Well, that's a different question. Does it have wings or not wings? What's the problem? There's God. Listen. Very simple. There is God.
Something beyond.
There is God.
Psychology or.
Yeah, of course. Psychology meaning something that's only in Mia.
Yeah.
For sure. Yeah. Something between. Something,
I mean, it comes to
being,
me in the.
No,
that
no.
Way.
It might come through that. Nobody disputes that. But it's something real. Something external to your soul. Yeah. That's what an angel is. An angel is not a part of yourself.
Is a thought also... A thought is also part...
Let's move on. I'm just
wondering if you're saying, is it the same thing as a thought?
No.
Or completely...
When you say a thought, usually you think something that exists because of you. Not exists... Maybe you exist because of it. In any case, it exists before you. Greater than you. External to the mind. Has independent existence. That's an angel. Otherwise, it's not an angel. It doesn't do what an angel has to do. So, the kids, that's anyone that believes in Malachim, that I don't believe in Malachim, he doesn't think Malachim are things in your head.
I'm just wondering what this belief is. What is it? What is this entity?
We'll get into discussion. When we'll do angelology, then we'll start having discussions what they are. But now you don't even have room for such a thing in your world. Do you understand my problem? My problem is not that you don't think Malachim do have wings, and I'm saying they don't have wings. No, they're just intellects. Okay. But when I say intellects, you think something in your head. It's not something in your head. It's some real thing. Something that the world doesn't make sense without. And it's not God, and it's not us thinking about God. Okay? It's something in between those two things. Mm-hmm. Okay? In between, in the sense of...
And also not in our thoughts, which is our world. Which
right.
Is,
not dependent on your thoughts. Everything can come in your thoughts. Human thoughts are straight this crazy, weird thing that can somehow touch everything. But not only about because of your thoughts, okay? Why am I saying this?
And those things think by themselves, those without you.
Yeah, of course.
Right, okay.
Things that don't go away when you close your eyes, remember?
No, it doesn't do with you at all. Even if you're dead, it's existing, it's...
Again, we can get into discussion. Maybe it needs you to give it food to continue to live. I don't know. You understand? You have discussions. But the existence of a space in the world for such a kind of being, you understand what I'm talking about? That's something that we lost, that we don't have. Now, why am I saying any of this?
Because that's the second type of Jew that doesn't believe in the angels.
Oh, very good. So, Bekitze, so there's only these two kinds of Jews. The Jews that say they believe in angels, but have no idea what angels are. They never seen any of them. No angels will talk to them because they're too stupid for them. And, yeah, you know? You know why Leonovi doesn't come to the Fremiyidin? Because he doesn't like to Mishigua. The other guys, he doesn't come to because they don't believe in him. Like, it would be very hard when they come. But the Fremiyidin doesn't come because they're Mishigua. So who should he talk to? Only to me, basically. Now, this is a very deep joke. So, this is the bias. So we don't have anyone, right? We basically don't have that. So now, what we do have, this is a very sad situation, and we're here to solve the situation. This is my conspiracy. We're going to solve the situation and create this whole school of people that believe in angels. Finished. Not because of Shtait Netor. If you believe because of Shtait Netor, if you ask the right, I told you many times, if in the Lakewood, everyone believes in Shtait, then why could say it in the Gemur? They don't believe in Shtait, they believe in the Gemur. They believe they have to say it because it says in the Gemur, and we don't pass like the Rambam. Okay.
And you want them, it said, if you remember, you said once that the biggest lie that they don't believe in Shtait is because if someone says, I just saw a shade, everyone laughs at you, no one believes you.
Right.
Because they don't believe in Shtait.
I say this for a long time. I think you should say you believe in Shtait.
Right?
You know, who walks into that dark alley, like, oh my God, maybe this shade here.
Those are one of the solutions, right? Those are one of the solutions, weird modern solutions of saying that everything is about the text, and it says a mitzvah, it's a chiyuv, and so on. Yeah. So, the kids said, this is the Baha'u'llah. Now, what we're going to do, how we're going to do this, I don't know why I'm saying this, but what we're going to do, or one of the things we could do is that there are some very Yechidus, so out of all the Jews in the world, all the Jews living in the modern, there must be more. I'm thinking, I don't know, it can't be. Maybe there's very few Jews, and the few Jews didn't really read a lot. I don't know why there's so few Jews even trying to do this. I don't know why. Or maybe there are, and they're just Mishigulim. I'm not sure. So, we have to try to find a few people that have enough courage and enough independent thought. They basically just think by themselves and are able to tell us how to think about the world and how to go about this. Now, I think that this Yid, Rav Mishael Karelitz, was one of the only people that actually thought in like the last 100 years. Of course, he was also Frem and also therefore Meshege. So when you read him, sometimes like for one line he's thinking, and then the next line he's just saying Shtait Netor. And you have to know that this is a big way. It's hard for me to know because I don't know myself. Maybe sometimes when I think he's just saying that, he's really thinking. I just didn't get the thought because this is one of the shortcuts people always use. Like even me, I say, it just says you have to believe it. That's not a reason for anyone to listen to what I'm saying. But that's what a shortcut that people that have authority and that are used to the world of authority and speaking in authority do always. So it's very hard to understand when they're doing it. But what you could notice, I think, is that he is trying very hard, and he wrote this little book that's very incomplete and very not fleshed out. I think it's a very... Many of the things he does are like this, not only in Allah, also he has this problem. But it's very not fleshed out, and there's a lot of things where he like notices the real problem and then just closes it with some weird like animam. But...
I mean, Allah isn't his thing to not go with authority, essentially.
Yeah, but he also usually doesn't have enough... It's like... He very often realizes something very good and then get stuck somewhere. Or like his argument could go both ways and he doesn't even realize that the same good thought that he has actually proves the other side also just as much as it proves his. Things like that.
He just seems to be very, very quick to jump off.
I'll give you an example, a very concrete example that I found last week about that he reads here. But one thing he does that most people don't do is actually think. Like he actually tries to do this activity called thinking. In yeshiva, they don't teach you to think. They teach you to do what ChatGPT does, to mix up a bunch of thoughts that other people had and put it in the right order. He actually thinks sometimes. He uses books to think. He uses authorities to think, but he doesn't only repeat what the authority does. He thinks. He tries to also identify. He tries to think until he agrees with what it says or until he believes it. Okay, and he talks about this explicitly in this little book, I think. So, and therefore it's very valuable. Extremely valuable just for this. Maybe there's some other people that did this. I don't think there's other people. Because like I said, either the Mishagom who just say Shtat Nalagatoid and you go to Kenim if you don't believe, whatever. Or they're just already accepted upon themselves the yoke of everything that whoever is the professor of their city believes, and they're just trying to make something work within that.
The Meshchachma didn't? No, I don't mean that you should count the Meshchachma. Like you don't find that he thinks like in a...
I don't know. I don't find him thinking.
Really?
That says very good Pshutim, but Pshutim are not thinking.
No, you don't.
It's at least not revealed. Yeah, I mean, he had a thought. I can't say they didn't think. No, but it's very hard to know if someone
thought. No, he has like
it's
real problems.
It's one of the secrets.
I think he touches like real problems. Like
that could be,
like,
but that's because he's not,
like,
he's smart and he read a lot of things. But you don't know, really, when you, as far as I can, I've read his book, I haven't found him ever thinking.
See, you could, if you
can't
read,
prove this, it's not
if you read Moshe Bucham in a very, like, textual way, you'd be able to come with his trouble.
No, the Moshe Bucham is very explicit. Yeah, that's true.
Also,
Moshe Bucham is basically on the wrong about in most of the Ashkafas, but that's different. What's the proof that Leibovitz liked it? So,
what's the proof? Shai Leibovitz liked it.
Yeah, it's that he was wrong.
He's a guy,
so, no, he's also very modern in his thinking, and he doesn't ever think through it. And most of the things that people know from him, he's saying he's very stuck in certain dichotomies. But I can't get into this. You can't prove that someone thought that. It's very, very, very important thing. Nobody could prove if someone else thought. It's a secret.
You could just say you could write the same without thinking.
Of course. The Moed Vechem actually is the book that does think, and that's in that sense it's different than most other even the Shoinim, because most of them don't do thinking.
I haven't seen any other ones.
There are other ones, I think. I know. We're talking about other ones, but the Moed Vechem does thinking, and obviously one of the ways to see it is that he has open questions, right? Sometimes he's Megamkem, sometimes he's like Moshe Rabbeinu, sometimes he's Chvat Per, Chvat Loshem. Now, some people every shiur that they say is beautifully wrapped and finishes, and ever, you know, he starts with 17 kashas on the pusik, and at the end he finished all 17 kashas. That's a bluffer, right? I mean, maybe there's one kasha. This one I actually know. I don't know. That shows you that he's real. Otherwise, just saying a nice thought. Okay, no problem. It's backwards. So Mesh Chachma never stands Tzorichin, like Tzorichin in a basic thing. Like this, I'm puzzled by this, and it's very hard actually. That's the whole book about
suffering.
He doesn't openly, but I think it's very his seams of his thoughts are way more obvious than anyone else's, which shows that at least for one line, explains how hard it is to ask questions. The Chazalish doesn't, of course he doesn't, but I think that when you read him thinking about basic stuff, you'll notice that for one line he thought, and then the next line doesn't actually answer that thought, which means that he got upset at himself and he's like, "Ani man." I actually have learning teachers that act in that way, and I respect them very much because they're not lying to themselves. They do lie. They are from. They're afraid of, and that's not only from guys. It's also a certain wisdom because the other people that are like take one thought and then just run with it are usually dumb. They're one dimensional also. You know this. Most of the people that you know that write blogs about how rationalist they are, they basically had one thought or a quarter of a thought in their life, and they just like followed through all of them, all the conclusions from that. But that's not very smart. Like basic wisdom is that there's another side of that. So if someone says, "Well, this sound seems to be correct," and he has a line of that real thinking, and then he's like, so that can be interpreted as saying, "Okay, but I'm not the first one to think in the world, Moshe Rabbeinu or whoever thought also. So from now, I'll just move on." Right?
But it seems that you do the same thing with the ancient versus the modern. Like you don't see so much like the modern hour serious thinker.
No, it's not true. Chas v'shalom. It's just because you people are so stuck that I have to hack enough to
just
get it out.
Just a matter of what we're the balance like.
Yeah, it's just balance.
Uh-huh.
Not true. They're very serious. Not only they're very serious. All their arguments are already saying Plato.
Saying Plato?
Yeah. Uh-huh. They didn't really invent any new arguments. They just did exactly that. They take one side of the argument and run with it. So that's why I said in the beginning of the sheet, this start of story is not really the best framing. I should stop doing it, but it's hard enough to get people to understand what I'm saying when I do it with this clutch of historical thinking, that if I do it without it, you'll really go crazy. But it's really, all these theories were there forever. Like the Sutton, like I told you, the Sutton that spoke to the Marishan already said all those arguments. It's not nothing new.
Freud and Jung and everything was there?
Yeah, all of it. Of course.
Really?
Yeah. If you actually read the ancient texts, you'll find them, all the arguments. And if you read some like modern academics, they're always doing this. Like, oh, people say that Descartes invented this, but really it's in some guy from 1,000 years before.
And this is what we have, right? This is what we have.
Yeah, that's only the ones written down.
The whole societies of people said chocolate and dying it also. Then.
Right, so there's nothing is really new. Or describing things historically is not the best way, but I'm doing this way because it's at least a framework that people have in their head. Like, at least helps you to be able to grasp what's going on. So, but that's what very important. I don't do it very well. I'm always tend to like finish up sheeting in a way that makes it seem like it's closed up. But that's the sign. Sign is when you see him like thinking very clearly, and then suddenly, where did his clarity go? Oh, his Yetzer Hara, his Yetzer Tov woke up. Okay, no problem. I get it. So that's what I think about him, and I think. That's a general thing that I noticed, that he has these very clear thoughts, and then also does not by default, when he thinks, and many people that I know think that they think for themselves, but they really just repeat themselves what the New York Times wants you to think, because that's naturally or by default what people end up thinking. But man is, or if you're the opposite, you're becoming stubborn, they say everything the opposite. Slavery is good. Oh, slavery is bad. I don't know. Aristotle wrote 3 chapters about if slavery is good or bad. There are good arguments on both sides already in that book, The Politics. And even more ancient books. So, if you decide one, if it's obvious to you one or the other side, then you're not serious. So that's the thing. Now, the problem with Chazanish is two things that I shouldn't really do. Is I should tell you some things that he says and to show this to you. But the general thing problem I have is two problems. One is that he doesn't really have the full picture, the full ancient picture. He's still missing a lot. He ends up getting very frustrated. You see him getting frustrated. Because he doesn't have the full picture, he can't really account for everything in the full way. That's one thing. And the second thing is that the clutches that he uses to hold up his old beliefs are very dumb. So the dumbest one being this idea of tzivi, of God's commands. Because, for example, and get back, now we're going to back to where we came from and try to continue a little bit. But if we can go back where we came from. Where we came from is that there's this modern belief that what matters is only what's in your heart, right? That's what it means, right? It must mean that, right? That's what we think. And there's even a 3-word statement from Chazal that obviously matches all our biases, that says, right? That's not a serious way of thinking, obviously. But that's what we'll think. So, now, that's what the Chassidim comes to say, so we have the best hearts. Or the Malamusr, the different version of what a heart is, but same idea, right? And now comes the Chazon Ish, and he's looking at these people, and there's this book, a famous book, Chaim Grader wrote, what's it called? The Chazon Ish's friend, what?
Yeshiva.
And many people have said that if you want to understand the Chazon Ish's Ashkofas, he does a somewhat better job of explaining the characters that he's fighting with. Because the Chazon Ish is not a very good writer, he tries to be a writer, but he's not very good at describing characters and stuff like that. He was a novelist. It was his friend, it was his Chavrissa, Chaim Gada, and he wrote a book or two about Chazon Ish. He doesn't say his name, he calls him something else, but it's basically about him and the characters around him and how the different ways of living life. And one of the things you see is how Chazon Ish is living in this world, and he's just living with all these people with different like radical ideas or different concepts of what a good person is. And he's very much trying to hold on to this like very ancient thing, but he also thinks that it's a lot more sophisticated. And this is the important thing. He realizes, and this is, I gave a very important class last week. You should listen to it. It's Niyadash, but you should listen to it because I can't repeat the same mashulam that I gave there.
Yeah, I started listening to it.
The one I talked about when I talked about Novel of Rishas HaTayra. Something very important there. But the point is that when you, something that you notice, if you're smart enough, most people are not smart enough to even get to the first step, and they're so excited about the first step, they never move on. But if you notice, you read all these people, right? You read Chassidus, or you read Musar, or you read, what else do people read? Nobody here reads anything, so. Anyways, If you read the Chvaisishvos, you read the, and you notice at some point that all these people are crazily simplistic, they're repetitive and boring, in a very significant way. Like Baal Musa, if you read Baal Musa, you went to Yeshiva, you open on the Musa shelf, one of the Musa Shmosim, they say nothing for pages on end. And they consider themselves the smartest, wisest, greatest people on God's given earth, right? What is going on here? And they like have this guy, they're like, they're Yeshivas, they're just talking by advice, by Barova, they're just talking the same love, this all over and over. We're like, we don't understand humanity, right? That's what the Baal Musa claim, right? All of them, every single Baal Musa worth anything, I'm not going to give names here, right? They all have this like thought that we understand the human being. Nowadays it's called something else, Toiras HaNefesh, right? I'm not even Toiras HaNefesh. You read the guy's theories. He doesn't understand nothing. He has like quarter of a theory, and he's like, wow, he's so impressed by it. It's like now, right, the same idea. Like he's a psychologist, and he gets people. And then the Chazanish is looking at these people, and he's like, he's very smart, Chazanish, you have to realize, right? He's a really talented guy. And his mind works quicker than most people, and he's ready to think. Two very important ingredients I need for anything to make sense. You have to both have a quick mind, because if it takes you forever to get to a thought, it's just going to take very long. And you have to have a lot of courage. You have to actually think. And he's listening to these people, and he listens to the shmus and the altar of blah, blah, blah. And he's explaining to you how people fool themselves sometimes. And he writes 14 volumes about how people fool themselves. And you're listening to this, and you're like, yeah, okay, now what are you getting to with this? Like, what are you trying to tell me? And he's like, yeah, you should always remember that people fool themselves. Okay, and it seems to me that you're fooling yourself pretty well while you're doing all of this. You didn't really get past. This is not just an argument of like, oh, you're the same thing. The argument is that Chazanish says, look, I learned Chesha Mishpach with Shach and Ketzos. I want to tell you something. The understanding of humanity that's in the Shach and Chesha Mishpach is 10,000 miles deeper than your understanding of Negias. They literally wrote 14 Simonim about Hilchas Negias, Hilchas Shechet, whatever, not exact, but things like that. The whole Chesha Mishpach is about people deluding themselves, right? I think that it's Kilosh, you think it's Kilosh, what do? And it happens to be that the Chesha Mishpach seems to have a much more sophisticated and detailed understanding of humanity than Baal Musa, who thinks he's so much smarter. The halacha that's from Ovel B'Shiz HaTorah, that one wind in Torah, I have understanding. And then he says, well, I've been to the Torah with you, Baal Musa. It is a little bit low life, you're another man, because you're not right, right? You're going to the name. And there's a story, I told you the story.
What's the story?
I'm not going to repeat stories. Doesn't matter. When you go to the Torah with Baal Musa, anytime, you have in your yeshiva, those Moshiach, Chal Baal Musa, you have an argument with him. He's the stupidest guy, not only the stupidest, the most self-righteous Rusha that you can think of, and he would be a real good Rusha, like you enjoy his arguments, Einzah. He's stupid, they're like simplistic, and the guy walks around as if he figured out humanity. And nobody else figured out humanity. And there's something
that's
very funny here.
General sickness of people who think they discovered new nature.
Right, true. Some of them did discover something. These people didn't even discover something. No, I'm not getting about that tomorrow. I'm getting it at is that Chazanish is this guy that spends hours and hours every day reading, you know, Chtoisvises and Rambams and Shachs and these complicated things. And he learns the Luch Lamais, right? He's not a B'chaim Briska that makes everything into philosophy. He reads it as commentary on human condition, right? Behim Halacha, all Gemara is about Luch Lamais. What do you do? Not only what do you do in the sense of the Psak, it's much deeper than that, right? Halacha is really about life in a much deeper sense than Musar is, right? If you learn Halacha in the Halacha way, right? Not just like a theoretical. It's about the complexity of human relations. When, I'm not talking about Menon Lamakam, I think that he gets stuck when he talks about Tzitzis in this way. I think it's a little confusing. Although maybe I'm the one wrong because I'm limited here from Tuch Siddish. But think about the other day, think about Chesha Mishpach. These are things talking, really getting into the kishkas of what it means to be a human being. And the important thing is you never come out of a sugi the way you went into it, at least from the Chazanish, right? Many people, they just end up with the same biases, but he doesn't. Because not only because people think that this is very important, whoever learns halacha or things like that should realize. But people that have this story like this, there's two kinds of poskim. One of them, whenever before he even opened any book, he knows already what the psak is going to be, he just has to find the ra'ah. Right? And why? Because he has a basic sech le'yasher, he has an understanding of those things. He has an understanding of what you need, and he gives it to you. No problem. Usually those people make a lot of sense. Or if for the people that think in a similar way to them, right? Then there's the people, the litvak say that seems false, right? Then you're just putting your own biases in the Torah. No, the correct way is that you don't know what halacha is, and you ask the Torah, you look in Shechnarach, and you pass me what it says in Shechnarach. That's what people think is the two options. And this is a very good moshel of this story. These are the two options that people think of in general about humanity. Now, I think the Chazon Ish teaches a third option, and I also try to teach a third option. The third option is like this. Of course, I have an opinion about what should be the halacha before I read it. Otherwise, I don't know a person. And of course, authority of the text is only one part of the process of jurisdiction. Yeah, it's true. Authority is important. We can't go against something that says clearly no, the poskim, and so on. There's a Latin word for this. And so on. Okay. But now the main thing that we're doing when we're learning is not either of these two things. For the first thing, you'll just do what Rabbi something does and just say the psak, and if he has time, write a tshuva because he's smart enough to write a tshuva. If you're doing the second thing, also you can just ask the look in the bottom notes of Pesach Tshuva and do whatever it is. Both of these things don't make you learn. What's the point of learning? The point of learning is that you think you're so smart and you have this intuition, this svud of what the halacha should be, and then you open up the Gemara and you see the Gemara also thought of what you thought for 1 second, and the next man they thought of second thing, and the third man they thought of third thing, and they after when they finish the sugya with Tosfos, you have 14 different ways to think. Not 14 different ways that the Rashba says, so what should I do? He actually opened up a different way. He said, wait, could you think about it from a different angle? And now you're like, wait, now I really don't know what to do. Now you have to actually count, figure out with, not, and all these angles are just complexity of reality, right? They're not svuris. But people think that svuris are things in your head. That's the same problem, right? Svuris are not things in your head. Svuris are descriptions of reality, right? Someone... What was the right? He's the Ruv on the Bes Medrash, and the other guy wants to be the Ruv also. And of course he's right, because... Okay, but did you think about another way of describing this story in which the other guy's right? And did you think of a third way, and a fourth way, and a fifth way? That's the way the Chazon Ish reads the Halacha. And he reads the whole history of the law in this way. And he tries to learn from each one. If he doesn't agree with what he says, but he's not someone that believes in every Achra. If he's wrong, he's wrong. No problem. But... usually, the people that he trusts enough to make him think, right? They're making him think. And he never comes out of the sugya with the bias that he went in. Even if he does, he's now much more sophisticated about it. He now understands the reality a lot clearer, a lot better. Right? Not worse. Many people, they start off with a good theory, and then they end up all confused because they put in all these eminas, all these like authorities. He has a clear understanding because, in the reality, every shitta is because of a certain viewpoint of reality that you missed because you were so smart and you knew how it is. Right? Now this is very basic to anyone that actually knows how to learn ever. But most people don't do it. And especially those people that are mezalvan learning, they're like, wow, the learning people, they're just because they think that the only way to learn would be to learn an authority way. And therefore they're like, no, but we're just good people. You're not good people. You understand about a quarter of a percent of what it makes a person tick than the Shulchan Aruch understands. So the Shulchan Aruch is just a lot better. By the way, I give this mushal for about Benon Lechavere because I do have this like Protestant thought always that Benon Lechavere doesn't really matter. But in a certain sense, it's the same thing, right? Like, I know how to keep Shabbos. You rest. All right, do you really know what rest is? You can do what Sakuris used to people and try to make them tell you what rest is, and you'll notice that they don't know. The Hilchot Shabbos, no, I don't know. In Hilchot Shabbos, at least, there's... 14-fold deep, more complicated understanding of what rest is that has something to do with the reality. Now, are we applying the reality correctly? Do we understand the halacha correctly? And is the world different? Those are all legitimate questions. But it definitely has a much more sophisticated theory of what means to rest. And not only what means, not what means in the sense that I could give a shtickle tailor and explain you. No, of understanding the actual reality. What happens? Look around. What are people doing when they work? What are they doing when they rest? Which ones are resting? Which ones are working? What would cause you to work even if you think you're resting? But really, your head, your work, that's another title. I don't know. Things like that. You'll notice that halacha has a lot more sophisticated viewpoint on reality than all these elements of all these chassidus put together. That's why, for example, I want to give you an example that's close to me, because I think this is true. People read Kisveri, okay? This is my sheet from Peter, but I'm not repeating it. But people read Kisveri, and the Rila is all technical. He's describing the 17,000 levels of Elamayit Sira, okay? And now everyone knows 70,000 levels has combinatrix. 70,000 kinds of those, turns out how many? Right? And people are like, well, this is boring. What do? They go to Ramchal, or people like him. They say, oh, the Rizal is just a mushal. The Nimshal is that he should be a good guy. Oh, the Nimshal is that sometimes God has chesed, and sometimes he does things that you like. That's called chesed. Sometimes he does gvura, which means he does things that I don't like. And the Rizal was just complicating this with a mushal because the Ram's theory of visions of prophecy. And I look at this guy and I tell you, I don't know if your mushal Nimshal is good. But I want to tell you one thing, that Israel is much smarter than you. Because your theory of the world has three variables. There's Hanagas HaYechad and Hanagas HaMishpat, only two variables. Narizal's theory of the world has 17 million variables. It's just much more close to reality. The reality that we know about, all of it, of course, the great like hope of the like theories of everything is like reduced everything to five principles, and somehow that will explain everything. Narizal doesn't disagree with that, but then we have to spell that out, and it turns out into 17,000 variables. There isn't a way of calculating the real world without all these millions of variables. So you're just stupid. You're just simplifying everything and all the way to an extent where it's not even interesting in some sense. Like, oh, that's why we needed the Kabbalah to tell us that there's Chesed and Gvura in the world? Wow, amazing. I'm so impressed. And you're convinced that you're the smart guy and he was the dumb guy. Now again, maybe that Israel's picture is all fantasy and the actual 70,000 variables are different ones. I don't have a proof to say that. But the way in which he's going about it is a lot more sophisticated than anyone else, than all these people that are so smart they think they have the nimshel. So that's the same argument that I would make in that sense. And this is one of the Chazanish's big like things. I mean, noticing you on it, and he's starting to show you. And the problem is that I think that his problem is that he, when he gets into saying this, he doesn't say it like, right, like I'm doing a much better job of describing what he should have said than what he actually said. Because what he said was, you're an epigoidus. You think that you're going with your cycle, but the epigoidus is the opposite of your cycle. And he, because he doesn't have patience to explain to you why your cycle is kind of basic, he just says that. But what he really means to say is you're dumb, not you're an epicurus. It's much worse to be dumb than to be an epicurus anyway. Like, you thought that, not only you're dumb, you're a dull guy. Like, you figure out humanity because you figured out this comes from the gears. Like, but I'm so proud of it. Like, you realize that we started there, that's where we're coming from? Like, yeah, people have the gears. Thank you very much. Is that all of it? Does that explain everything? No, it doesn't explain nothing. I mean, it explains something, but you're taking like one little thing and applying it to everything in a really weird way. Of course, then the Chazanish then talks about Negius and explicitly attacks it and says very funny things. But and
maybe that's why it fails, by the way, is that when people who are a certain, you know, certain seniority discover a simple thing like that for the first time, it's mom, they think it runs the world, and they tell it to a young guy, and they're like, okay, and then he moves like, what now, what else?
Could be.
And it just like burns out of it.
Could be. Yeah, there's something in all these movies.
Because I read, I think the same you're talking about. I read whatever someone's saying it over about the bias, and I never want. And I'm like, whatever, it's very good. Like, moved on. Like, I wouldn't be able to make my like structure my life around.
Like, even the psychologist who wasted 30 years studying biases came up with a more sophisticated theory of human bias than the Baal HaMasseh. And that turned out that theory was wrong also. like this, it's very, yeah, the point is, and this halacha that we're all happy to make fun of, as if it's not serious. Now again, now the Chazanish here is where I'm disagreeing with him, because he gets stuck, he says like, the halacha is what God wants from you. Why? Where do you get to that? Why do you need that even? You don't need that. The halacha is just people thought for longer time, and in a more serious way about these cases than you did. You, why do you need more than that? Now, where does God come from in general? Maybe it also has to come from God. I get it. But you don't have to get to this stage. When he gets to it, he's just doing a lot of demagoguery, like, very often. And I want to give you one example, and I'll finish. I want to show you where you could argue with Malacha. And where I would do the same thing the Chazanish does to him. So, it's over here. And the Sefer HaKodesh, Chaminat Chazanish. There's a story over here. Where is it? He talks about, I have to tell you, I forgot where it is. He talks about a yid that thinks he has good midas, but he doesn't listen to the halacha. Where is it? Do you remember where it is? To find that I can't say it in the Veltaran because it's gonna be. I think it's in. I thought it was here. Second. Hmm. Oh, yeah, here. Perek Dalet Aleph. He talks about the concept that he's trying to get at something that I'm not going to get into exactly where he is, and maybe there'd have to be another sheet about this, because that's really what I want to talk about. I repeated that dilemma again. He says, Ma'asim b'chol yom, that someone thinks he's a lot of Yiras Shemayim, but he doesn't actually have direct Yiras Shemayim. And this is about the unity of the virtues, but I'm going to get to it. But he gives an example. I want to give you an example, and I want to tell you that his example is wrong. He says, Ma'asim b'chol yom, this guy thinks he's such a tzaddik. He understands that he has a problem with Benud Mechaber, sometimes he has bad minutes, but he thinks that at least Yiras Shemayim hater zich. That's what the Chazanish is attacking. And he says, this Yid, Master Shah, apparently this is a story that he saw. It happened that they called him to be oil the Torah. They said, yeah, I'm blind and blind. And I have lapped, they didn't go to Dalia. Why not? Because he's the Adam Chashev. And Adam Chashev doesn't pass them to get Revi'i, whatever Dalia was. He only goes for Shlishi. So they didn't go. The Chazanish Di house says, okay, you have bad middles, but at least Yir Shemayim you have. You don't have no Yir Shemayim. You forgot that it says, if you call you to be oil the Torah, not oil, you're in Vaz Dvar Hashem. The Torah is covered. It's more important that you're not Shekovit. So you think, I'm a tzaddik. If the Eibishter wants something from him, I'm always giving it to him. A mensch, sometimes I wouldn't say that, have proud. You're not a serious person, Bechlal. You're Bechlal, Tachas Shultni Yetzirah. You think that everything you're just doing with your haggle. That's Chaznish's Drush. It really astounded Musa Drasha in some sense, but I'm trying to use it for something deeper than that, but I can't get it to this. Now, I want to tell you the Chazanish that he seems to set up this like very clear dichotomy. Like, if the guy would follow the Alecha, then of course it'd be Oyla, because it's a very bad thing to call the Oyla Torah, not Oyla, Mavad the Torah. Since he only cares about his own covet, therefore he is not Oyla, and this is a uses that to prove a very big point about this guy that he thinks is Yiras Shemayim, but not Yiras Shemayim. Just Chazanish says you never had really conflicts with Yiras Shemayim. You think you're so from, you think that in that sense you're Sherlock Alitzer. That's the really important point. You think that you're not a person that Nimshachacha Yetzer Hara, because you see that when it comes to buying matzah, he spends the most money. He said, yeah, because he used to that. But really, if you have any little problem that does bother you, suddenly you don't have any Yiras Shemayim Ochetnish. Not only you have bad, but this you have no Yiras Shemayim either. You're not. What Chazanish is saying is that it's not true what Bal Musa say, that people are Muslim b'mukim, but not b'mukhavayra. He said that guy is not Muslim b'mukim either. That's really his goal with this story. Okay? That's the Chazanish of the Ma'asa. Now me, Ani Akutin, I have a baya. What's my baya? Now he thinks, Chazanish's way of saying this is that a Yiras Shemayim is someone who does exactly what says Shechan Orach, if you care about yourself. And it turns out that you don't have the middah of Yiras Shemayim either, you have something else, right? That's what the Chazanish is explaining it to be. But what's my explanation? I have a different explanation. Right? What's my explanation for why halacha is more serious than Musar? That halacha has a lot more details, right? Halacha takes into account a lot more complexities of situations. And that's why there's no such a thing. Everyone has this rhetoric about halacha being the clear-cut system, tells you always what to do. Halacha is the furthest thing from telling you always what to do. Have you ever learned halacha? There's a lot of simmah jachnu that doesn't go. Usually you do this, but sometimes. But if it was Tuesday after Chalama, then halacha is the most non-dogmatic legal system that you could think of. There's always a way out. Not there's always a way out because it's not serious. Because it is serious. Because reality is like this. Right? Not the Chazanish, all these people that have this rhetoric about following halacha, they get stuck with this. Halacha is way too free in reality for them. Not free, I'm not saying free, it's way too real. And therefore it actually conforms entirely, it should conform at least entirely to reality. But to them halacha is this like formalistic system. Chazanish understands that halacha is not like that, but he still uses the same rhetoric because that's why Chazanish is so to himself. I think Chazanish understands very well that halacha is not like that. He lives like that, he learns halacha like that, but then when he has to argue this with the people that he argues with, he ends up stuck and saying, oh, the halacha is like against you, you're not Ritz Hashem. But actually, it turns out if you actually think about, learn a little bit, you find out that this exact question, what do you do when you're a chashvayit? Talk about a chashvayit on poch, not some let's, right? Someone whose honor, the truth is that anyone's honor is important. But if your honor is connected to the Torah, and you get called to an aliyah, that's not the correct aliyah, what do you do? Chazanish seems to have a very clear halacha. The halacha says that you should go, but if you're a shaygit, then you don't go, and you shiny, you're really a shaggot. Now, me, it's like low, I'm not so sure about this. And since this is the authority world, I have an authority on my side. I think that it's possible that you should not go, Of course, that's talking about the guy who should go. Well, you never done a kimta. You never know how halacha works. That's talking about someone that it is. He's a guy and he deserves this aliyah. It's not really. He's overestimating which aliyah he deserves, basically. So then, but if you're really a person that deserves a different aliyah, maybe that person is right. That is kavod. You should not go. You should. What's so wrong? And how do I know? V'loimen dat. Yeah, I saw this. I found this. That's why I started thinking about it. But it's the Heilige Rabbi Mizuk doesn't mean me. Very interesting. Everyone knows it says in the Masechet Nedarim. It says there's two things that it says the same answer. But here it says, why men tam dechum? Their children are not tam dechum. Says Rav. The Rebbe said in the name of Rav. Shem evarchem batoyer etchila. You remember this also. Ma'azvor. Le'evarchem batoyer. What does it mean? You know what it means? There's a bach. That's the opposite of what I'm trying to say about this. And other Torahs that everyone knows. But that's funny Torahs. So you didn't say bichsa Torahs, seriously, that's what it means. So the Rambam, now if you look at the Rishonim, this is another one of my big things. When you actually read the Rishonim, you see that most of these funny things, that there's so many, like, for them, there's really a basic understanding that you don't need all these kvetches for. But anyway, the Rambam wrote a letter to someone, or a tshuva, and he told them two pshutim that he heard. Two pshutim about this memra. One that he heard, and one that he thinks, which is the opposite of what he heard. Opposite of what he was mekabel. What spiritual, what is Rebbe, and Chayda told him this memra, he told him a pshat. And the Rambam says the opposite pshat. And what are these two pshutim? I'll tell you. The Rambam said that they were told them, he's Rebbe, and Chayda told him, that's the bot, Shayim Mevarchim HaTorah Tchila means, what Chaznish is talking about. There's Tam Nechomim, that they call it Be'er LeTorah, but Tam Nechomim, they usually think that they have better things to do in their time than reading the Torah, because they can the Chushnayas, Gemurah. So they're not early Torah. Or they're some older, they don't have patience to go to the big man read. So they sit at home, and they're not early Torah. Since they're Mazal in the Torah, their kids don't come to Tam Nechomim. That's what his Rebbe told him, Shat. Ramam's Rebbe. So that's, by the way, that's on the Chaznish's side. Then the Heilige Ramam said, he thinks that the Pshat is being Tvaket. He thinks the Pshat is Tvaket. What do you mean, think vakeh? Shaloi baruch v'tchor etchila means they didn't take the first aliyah. The halacha, the koyin koyin, and that's dafka when it's tamur, it's king, all the maratzim, all the dam dechum. Rav kudu v'kahan. Right? The Gemara says, if there's tam tchochum that's a koyin, and tamuritz is a tam tchochum is a yisrael or a leirich, and tamuritz is a koyin, the din is, says the Rambam, that tam tchochum has to be all the first. That's the din. Some rabbis were not like this, that the word edition. And there was none.
Isn't there a Mishnah about this?
Yeah, the Mishnah. No, it says in the Mishnah is about when they're not one is Tam Tchocha and one is Amoritz. When the Darkeshon, says the Mishnah, the Darkeshon. But that's all when they're both the same level in Torah. The Rambam says if one is Tam Tchocha, Rav was not expected. Rav was early Bekor, always in his yeshiva at least. When he was everyone recognized him as the greatest authority, was early Rishon. And therefore, he showed everyone the Torah is more important. Because the Torah is when I came from Malchus, and his children were Tam Nechomim. But if you are early later, you are early by Shlishi. Why? Because you think that this Kohen Amurit is better than you, and don't expect your children to be Tam Nechomim. They're going to think that being a Kohen is better. So the Rav's Pshat is being Tvaket. That the Oymish Nishtam is that the Chaznish is the one that's going to gain the Torah.
And
how the Luchel Amasa
is
Vatel's name. The reason why the Tzmi still wasn't burnt
is because
it was still the Kahan of our
tradition. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
That's
what I'm saying. The Buddha says, Kol Mish Lo Nivne. You expect coming from the Tzmi specifically.
What? Here he's talking about a different thing that it says, that the children from the Chum don't come out from the Chum.
Fine, but it's
the same thing. They're bringing the same shot in that Gemara.
What are you saying?
Yeah, of course. We have so many ways in which the Talmud Chachamim are not getting the honor. The Rebbe Shani are getting the honor, the Kehanim, and so on. And that causes the Talmud Chachamim not to have their power. And then, right? And who is shielding Talmud Chachamim himself, right? Because he should have not went when they called him for Shlishi, and only went when he called him for Shlishi, right? So what do I show you? Now, I don't know if this chat is practical and so on. You're saying you already told us. It's not much. She just let us get to Zoom. But it's not really practical, right? Halacha would be more serious. See? Halacha is always more serious than Aguda, right? Aguda can say, Shah Fadrusha. And this is Takawa, but Lamaisa. Oh, Lamaisa doesn't work with this. Because the world is more complicated than Shah Jesus told us, right? Shoyim. And I can even explain you why. And then you'll say it's not apologetic for Halacha. It's reality. Shah Jesus told us this reality. Yeah, we have to be Muhammad and Muhammad. Okay, but Lamaisa, that guy has. You can be Muhammad from the Nailam. So, Pral. Oh. And the Mishnah says the Darkashon, right? Like Moshe said, Mishnah says the Darkashon, right? because otherwise every week is going to be a fight, who's a bigger Talmud Chacham. Lo, the Kohen, everyone knows he's not a Talmud Chacham, he's just getting it because he's a Kohen and Shine. Okay. And anyway, that. But that's just me showing you that it's not simple. It's the opposite. And you use halacha for your musa, you make everything worse. Because halacha is, you understand what I'm saying? He said you should be a musa, or simplistic. You should be halacha, because halacha is clear. No, halacha is not clear. In other words, what you have to have is something called hayrua, something called tzayich leyusha, or called practical wisdom for nisus. That's the only thing that's really going to help. And that halacha doesn't give you that either. We're learning halacha, even in the chaznish's way. You see the chaznish himself, and it's really weird that chaznish gets, not only in this case, in many cases, he gets into the same thing. And on the one hand, he understands very well how halacha is given to the mind of the hamlacham. That's not like rules. And then when he thinks something is the rule, is the halacha, then he thinks that everyone else is that because they don't take halacha seriously. Of course, that's true that there's one part of halacha is to listen to the best and to the ruv, whoever's the shayfet that should be a mech. But that's another question. That's a political question. Who is the shayfet? But in any case, that's a general problem. But what I'm showing you is that there's always a halacha that has been tfaket.
And really, the way, Rambam like this also, with the government of Sanhedrin, can do whatever they want as they see fit, right? That's the Bali Ruwe. If a shtai,
yeah, that's explicitly going against the halacha. I'm saying even betoch the halacha. He's saying there's a halacha of Oiz V'Hashem, of Misha Kodin al-Tor Likros. There's also a halacha of M'vach Matar Tchilav, of who is the correct thing. That's a real thing. And the halacha, if you learn halacha, if you're this Shiva Sanhedrin, and that's achieved that they ask him Pshat Na'agudah, but okay, it shows you a lot more complexity of reality than this. And the reason, that's why I think the reason why we should say that halacha is better than Musa is not because halacha is Dvar Hashem, Musa is not Dvar Hashem. That's a very silly thing. Chaznish says that because that's his own, that's why he says say that, because he doesn't have a way of explaining how the world is complicated and how the goodness is in the real things. He doesn't, instead of saying that, he says Hashem made it good. That's a big problem. If he would have been like me, he would have said, "You are Musa, you're silly. You think that goodness is in your mind, and goodness is something so simple. The world is more complicated. Goodness is something about your actions. Of course, they have to be in accordance with what the mind says, but the mind is more complicated than what you think. It's not only about your will, it's about your understanding, and so on." And then, of course, halacha is about that. He's right. But since he doesn't have the language to say that, or maybe he has theological commitments not to say that, I don't know, he ends up saying something very silly, which is even wrong halachically. Because there's also a tzad that guy's right up here. Look, this is that's the end of the sheet for today.
The one that asked him, I think this story on him, Taka, they asked him, like, listen, this big Kamchokim said something, and it's connected to whatever, something, and he's like, it's like a Zayzay and Groy, but the Torah is not aggressive. In other words, maybe when he uses the Tzayn Hashem, he means just God is much more complicated, right? Much more sophisticated and complicated than your mind.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Not aggressive. Maybe. In other words, it's very funny that you're saying by the fact that he says it's on Hashem, he means all these things that you're saying.
I
you
think.
Find that
maybe,
in many
maybe
but
Hashem
I
is smarter.
You know,
maybe the point is that Hashem is smarter even than that.
Right, that's what I'm saying. Because that's back when the Chazon thought about these things.
Yeah, I can't.
Shut up.
Yeah, I guess. Okay.